plant and their expenses, their broadcasting equipment, and there's so much that they've not been able to repair or keep in good order or replace, or as we're going into new technology with digital stuff, they're holding things together with chewing gum and scotch tape around it, trying to, partly because of the mismanagement of the last number of years, but now trying to help us bail us out from what we, the situation we find ourselves in. So we're taking 20% of the station income now, station listener support, and that comes nowhere near covering the needs, the expenses that are coming, are generated at the national level, not including paying our accumulated debt. The accumulated debt is nowhere in this budget, and we're showing an $800,000 or $400,000 budget shortfall. So our stations can't do this. So what we need to do is, I think, in the short term, look for new revenue sources at the national level. I apologize for running on, but I think that that context is really important. We need a national stream of income if we're going to do national programming. Either that, or we need to stop doing national programming and use our station resources and share them nationally around the network and do national programming that way.
Okay, David was next.
Yeah, Dave Furtick, KPFK. I really appreciate the perspectives of Jabari and George, Teresa, Carol, everyone on the national board. I mean, it's vital that we have a long view and that we think down the road where we need to go and how to get there. We've had a lot of problems because, frankly, we're like a ship that was being driven under the rocks, and we rescued it. We had a lot of people in the crew, all of us here are listener activists on all sides of this room, and we have all gotten together to try to rescue this ship, pull it off the rocks, fix the hull, fix the mast, you know, save the cargo that's gotten destroyed, and try to engage, get back into the, pardon the expression, commerce of promoting communication and promoting world peace, social and economic justice. But in order to do that, we got to make this craft work. And while I agree we need to circumnavigate the globe and we need to take this cargo throughout the globe and pick up cargo and share the resources of this extraordinary, most important entity in this extraordinary time that we're living in, we got to get this sucker floating first.
And we are back here in the gymnasium of the All Souls Unitarian Church at 16th and Columbia. And we really appreciate you being here. The meeting is reconvening. We have three station reports to go here on WBAI in New York, WPFW in Washington, D.C., KPFK in Los Angeles, KPFA and KPFB, Berkeley, KFCF, Fresno. Let's go back to the stage area as Leslie Kagan urges the board members to come back to their seats, and we'll continue with Dwayne Bradley of KPFT in just a moment, giving his general manager report. At this particular time, the reports are going to be a little shorter, as we mentioned before, to try to get all of them in before the end of the meeting, as well as a report from the Pacifica Archives. So that is rapidly approaching, and we really appreciate all of you and your listenership this weekend. And we hope that you've gotten some good information out of the board meeting and how it works and how it has worked this time here in Washington, D.C. And as we have a moment of reflection, we do also want to thank all of the listeners and subscribers to these Pacifica stations for contributing to our amazingly successful fund drives and making this possibility of rebuilding the Pacific Network more of a reality. So thank you very much for your tremendous, tremendous response in the last little while. And we do urge you to pay your pledges whenever you receive a bill in the mail if you have not done so already. But amazing work by all of us to move Pacifica forward and to help rebuild the foundation in the hopefully years to come, thanks to your great support. And please call your stations and let them know what you feel is good about what they have to offer, and also please do offer your suggestions for ways in which the programming can improve at any of the individual Pacifica stations. And with the transformation of many of the program councils throughout the network, I think it's more of a possibility that the inclusion of various different interests and communities in the decision-making process will make this more of a community activist organization in a way that is very important for the future of Pacifica and very true to the mission. So we did want to mention that. Also want to thank Dan Coughlin for all of his work throughout the weekend in trying to ensure some of these broadcasts were happening, and all the great people associated with WBIX.org and KPFTX.org, et cetera, for their webcasts of the broadcasts, and all the stations for deciding to carry these programs throughout the weekend. So let's go back to the stage and see how we are going here in terms of getting this next report together.
Right there. All right, as soon as Teresa and Ray take their seats, this meeting is in order. We're back in session. We need to continue with the station reports. I want to do two quick things before we continue with the station reports. And I would like everybody up there to either leave the room or listen. Listen would actually be better. Right. One is that I want to make it clear, though, a number of the people from the diversity, the race and diversity, race and nationality committee are not in the room now. If they're up there, though, I really want you to hear this also, that I really hope, and I shouldn't say I'm speaking as an individual, and I am abusing the power of the chair for about 30 seconds. I very much hope and encourage that committee and the National Board Committee and the local committees that are dealing with the questions of race and nationality and diversity to find a way to address gender issues. They are central to the mission as well. And I don't say that for an iota of a second to mean that the race issues are unimportant, right? It is not detracting or undermining the attention that must be given to race and nationality and ethnic issues. It is adding another layer of concern that does demand our attention, and that's gender issues. So I just want to raise that clearly. Carol?
I believe when we adopted the race and nationality position paper in June, we specifically added gender. And if that wording never got in the final document, it should be. This should be the Race, Nationality, and Gender Committee.
Okay. So, if we could move on. The other thing I want to do, just because I'm nervous about us losing people, I asked some of the lab chairs who were involved in meetings and discussions last night, you know, after we adjourned, about the bylaws, you know, how to proceed with the bylaws process, to give us just a very 2-minute or less, whatever, update on where you are in the process, just so we know what's going on. Okay, very quickly, because it did come up earlier. So, Deb, are you going to do that? Yeah, that'd be great if you could do that right now. And then we'll move right into the KPFT reports.
We met last night up until 12 o'clock, and we were up to 7 o'clock this morning for a breakfast meeting. We have been working very hard. We have considered 15 items, and we really don't want to go over them item by item right now, because some of them need to be refined and gone back to the labs with. But we felt the meeting was very successful, although loud at times. There was essentially a feeling of working together and trying to find ways to overcome differences. And I think that what we intend to do is to go back to our labs, write reports, discuss it with our labs. A and T at least have meetings this coming week. And get in connection with each other and try and write a unified report, which will at least have three. And we have invited, we have made it clear that all stations are equally important, because if one of the three falls out on an issue, we still need three. So that that we really should, in all areas, be trying for unity.
So this will be coordinated by the lab chairs?
Yes.
Okay.
And we'll get back probably within a, oh, I'd say, week and a half?
January 5th?
Okay.
January 5th is the deadline. Any updates you can share as to how the process is going, that obviously would be great. Okay? All right. So let's move on then. We're going to skip there over to Texas, down to Houston, and hear from Dwayne Bradley, the general manager at KBFT.
Thank you, Leslie. And thanks to everybody here in Washington for hosting everybody here. It's been 14 years since I've been in Washington, and PFW was in Chinatown last time I was here, so things have changed a lot. It's wonderful being here, and good afternoon to anyone in the Houston area listening, since it is now afternoon there as well. Good morning to anyone out on the West Coast. I want to refer all the folks on the board, since this is a report to the board, I know primarily, if you go to tab 11, flip to the very back, there's one page, two sides, that's the report, and you can read it, it's fairly brief and concise. For folks who don't have the packet and are interested in some of these details, if it's not posted on Pacifica's site, I will put it on the KPFT site when I get back tomorrow. I don't want to read the whole thing. There are a couple of bullet points I do want to refer to, and then a couple of things that have happened since this was written a few weeks ago I'd like to mention. We, as well as I think all the other stations this year, experienced amazing growth. We had another record-breaking fund drive since our meeting in Houston in September, raised over $350,000. We got over, right at 1,800 new members. We're simultaneously going through a renewal cycle, and our listener membership decreased from about 9,500 to under 8,000, but with the new members we added during this fund drive, we're back up well over 9,000, approaching 10,000 listener members in Houston. So that's a positive. We've set that 10,000 listener member sponsors as a goal, a minimal goal. We'd actually like 20 or 30. We are in the fourth largest city in the country, and, you know, 10,000 is just the beginning. Since the last meeting, we have maintained our staff is still a dozen people, half of them on salary, half of them on contract. We just this week, starting December 1st, made a salaried final choice on the business manager. We had been using an account temps person since our business manager resigned in August to go to school. So Markeisha Van Zandt is now the full-fledged business manager at KPFT, and that's a real positive thing. She's worked very closely with the national office. Yasmin has been instrumental in working with her and getting her up to speed, and Yasmin feels that Markeisha is an excellent choice and is a great benefit to KPFT. She's picked up all of our systems. She's brought all the books current. All of our numbers are accurate and up to date. She can get into the general ledger and do amazing things. Yasmin's happy. We're happy. We've been able to reconcile an entire year's worth of numbers in just a matter of months. So that's a very positive thing. Also, another positive staffing situation. One of our senior news producers, we don't have a news director, but we took that news director's job and broke it into pieces and have a collective news department and use that money to hire two people. And one of them has left to go to the Middle East and is working on a grant over in Palestine right now on an art project. He'll be back in a little while, but in the interim, we invited Monica Lopez from Free Speech Radio News to come to Houston, and she accepted and showed up last week and is now working at KPFT in the news department. She was instrumental back after the transition in February when I was first hired. Monica came to Houston financed by Free Speech Radio News and trained the folks who actually became the news department at KPFT. So bringing Monica back is nothing but a win-win situation for KPFT, for Free Speech Radio News, for the training program in the news department at KPFT. It's all good. We also are looking at the probability of having Kata Mester relocating to Houston. We carved out 16 square feet in our little building there in Houston and created a third digital workstation that we christened the Kata Corner, because she came to Houston and was putting together Free Speech Radio News there for a couple of weeks. She's back in New York, but we spoke with her just before coming here. She's very interested in coming back down to Houston and working regularly in the corner there at KPFT. As far as programming, we have some changes in the offing before the year is out. We will be moving Peace Watch, which we begrudgingly started running when it first came on the air. We put it on 11 o'clock at night and replaced our Democracy Now! Rebroadcast with the Peace Watch program. So it diminished our exposure for Democracy Now! To folks at night. It also relegated this valuable program to a non-prime time slot. And we will be moving that program to a more prime time slot very soon in the next few weeks. And another change, I know Karabia mentioned in her comments on from the PFW board that she was impressed with a program that we have. It's called Open Journal, which right now there's only a Monday and Tuesday slot for Open Journal, but any volunteer program producer can sign up to do a program in one of these slots. And what we're intending to do with this program shift of bringing Peace Watch into the primetime listening area is shifting some programs earlier in the day as well to create five of these open journals as we had back in the springtime. So we'll be opening up more access points for lots of different people to do lots of different programs. Another thing that we're looking at doing at KPFT, in terms of national programming, we've had discussions, the general managers and the national staff, we got together and we spent most of the other day talking about some of these issues. And one of the things that we are really excited about doing in Houston, and we started this back when I first got this job and brought Flashpoints into Houston, which I still recommend to the other three stations and any other affiliates that might be listening that you should check into bringing that to your air. But we really like the idea of cooperative program sharing between and amongst not only the sister stations of Pacifica, but the affiliates or the associates or whatever you want to call them. There are certain charged words that we have to deal with in this new Pacifica, like words that have negative baggage attached to them, and I am loath to use them sometimes. But, you know, we have affiliates. There's some negativity attached to that because of the way they were treated, like the words banned and fired are words we don't like to use either, and markets and units and other terms that have acquired negative connotations over the past while. But the affiliates as well, I think the relationship between the Pacifica stations and our partners in broadcasting and community radio should be a two-way street. And so we're looking not only at importing and sharing other programs that we might have with our fellow radio stations, but also importing programs from them as well. Not only Flashpoints, but we're looking at programs from BAI, we're looking at programs from PFW and KPFK and KGNU and WMNF and various other radio stations around the country. And I think that's an interesting way for us to develop a better relationship between and amongst the community radio stations. So that's something that we're looking at doing in the near term too. Something else as far as programming at KPFT, we acknowledge that we haven't done nearly enough to to balance the inequities as far as race and gender and diversity in the Houston radio station. We've come a long way in the few months, realistically, looking back. It's only been 10 months or so since I came back to KPFT. And the changes have been enormous, but we also acknowledge that there's an enormous amount of work yet to do. And that's in terms of race and gender issues, issues with youth programming. We're working on those situations. We're working on rectifying the inequities in those areas. One thing that we're doing that I worked on the day before coming up here to Washington, Akua Holt, who is an old friend, a long-term volunteer programmer at KPFT, a victim of one of the mid-90 coups at KPFT, is working in conjunction with myself and others, Otis McClay, our program director, and others at KPFT to reestablish the relationship that we had at one point doing a live remote broadcast of the first night of Kwanzaa at the Shape Community Center in Houston. And this was a relationship that was longstanding and has been ruptured for nearly a decade. So much like news programming had disappeared from KPFT, the links between KPFT and the folks in the Third Ward at the black community at Texas Southern University and other places in Houston, these were ruptured as well, and they're being reestablished with things like reestablishing our live remote Kwanzaa broadcast. So that's something very positive. Another example of something we've done recently like that was partnering up with the folks at Project Row Houses in the Third Ward to train youth. We trained teenage kids on going out with mini disc recorders and documenting their neighborhoods as part of an art project, incorporating photography and audio into this installation that will be at Project Row Houses in Houston for the next half a year. So that's something positive as well. I want to address an issue I know Dave's going to hit me with, and so I'm going to preemptively strike, which is the issue of accessibility at KPFT. Anyone who's been to the radio station knows, Jane Jackson has come to the station and checked it out and given us her report on, problems that we have and the fact that there is no handicap bathroom, there is no ramp into KPFT. These are really important problems that need to be, of the many balls that we juggle at KPFT, it needs to be one of the top three that we've got in the air at this particular instant. And we have some funding for it. We have people working on the plans. We have a House committee that's supposed to be getting back to me with the next step in the next weeks. So hopefully, long before we ever meet again in Houston, hopefully in the next few weeks to months max, we will have rectified this situation, okay? I want to acknowledge the guys up here on the deck, John, Chris, and Jim, too. But John and Chris in particular, along with Otis McClay, our program director, at kpftx.org, our second audio stream. I mean, these guys are the folks responsible for any of the folks listening over the web to any of these broadcasts for many, many of these meetings this year. It's because of people like Otis and John and Chris. So and Jim as well. Okay, and that's really about it. I mean, y'all can read the report. There are some other details in there. And the one thing that's not in there, because it's something that has been an ongoing sore point, and I know Deb will address this a little bit in her report, is the issues involving the code of conduct and some of the interpersonal relationships that occur largely on the internet, but sometimes face to face in and around the world of Pacifica and KPFT. There were hearings that were held in Houston under the auspices of these code of conduct guidelines that we posted back in August. There were five hearings held Wednesday morning. I think personally that though there are many people have issues with the fact that this is something that we're using listener dollars with, and I am one of those people who has a problem with that. I also believe that under the circumstances it was the right thing to do, and that what I experienced in my hours that I got to spend dropping in and out of these the other day was, to at least some degree, a sense of healing. The fact that people who had felt they'd been grieved by someone were allowed to get this, to vent themselves in a venue where there was this authority figure, this ombuds that they could speak to, that the person that they had a grievance against was sitting at a table next to them, that they shared a space together and they got to hear each other without interrupting, without flaring out, without fighting about it. I think that that alone was a healing experience for several of the participants. And the ombuds will be bringing the results, the decisions on these cases to me tomorrow. So we'll post those and we'll move on. I mean, this, as many of the things we've experienced this year at KPFT and in Pacifica in general, have been evolutionary learning experiences. We learned from the original posting of this code of conduct that it wasn't sufficient. We've modified it. The secondary process of these hearings, we'll probably learn some lessons from this as well. But I'm overall very pleased with the changes, with the direction KPFT has moved this year. I think things are on the upswing. I'm very optimistic about Pacifica's future in Houston. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
One question, Dwayne. It's about flashpoints at KPFT. I wanted to know how well received it is in Houston, and whether you feel that it's... I'm interested in our finding ways to develop national programming with the resources we have at hand, and that program is already up and running, came out of the first Gulf War, as many awards and so forth, and is truly addressing the issues of civil liberties and the war and so forth that are foremost in our minds. I'm wondering how it's going over and being received in Houston.
It's going over extremely well, as I think probably at every station. Of course, Democracy Now! Has been our biggest fundraiser. Out of our $350,000 or so dollars, we raised nearly 80 of it came just from Democracy Now! This in the October drive. Flashpoints has been consistently in the top five as far as fundraising since we added it in the spring. And occasionally we have to call out to Berkeley and remind Dennis that he's not on only in Northern California, because they'll be giving directions to a church event in the city or something like that. And we get all these calls to the station asking us, well, wait a minute, where's Union Station, you know, or whatever. So sometimes we have to remind them, but it's actually in recent weeks we're now coordinating things. If we have a speaker in Houston that's germane to a topic that's on Flashpoints, they're actually giving information about Houston events as well. So it's actually developing very well.
Great. Okay, Ray, and then we need to hear from the left chair.
Yes, and then... Yes, okay. Hi. By the way, thank you again for your report.
If we could, let's hear from the lab chair.
Please.
And then have questions for either or both of them.
That's fine.
Okay. Okay.
Do you want the shortest report you ever heard? Things are good.
Okay. Thank you.
I do need to put in a plug for our committee system. It has worked phenomenally. We have a couple of new committees in addition to the one that Dwayne was talking about. We have a committee to promote diversity, and we've begun a dialogue at a very profound level about racism and what it feels like to the oppressor and the oppressee. And that's really at a deep level, and I think it's that level that the conversation needs to go on to make a real change. You can't legislate that stuff. It has to be profound. And the other thing I wanted to say is a thank you, a very big thank you, to at least Dan and Leslie, and I know many others, whose public statements about the kind of emails that were flying back and forth have really put a stop to it. Some people thought it was very cute or very funny, but the chair and the general manager, or executive director, rather, saying this is not funny, this is not cute, it has to stop, really went a long way, and I appreciate you taking a stand.
Good.
Okay, thank you. Okay, now, Ray and then that was record-setting. Record-setting. Ray.
Yes, I congratulate you. All the numbers point to tremendous improvement, and in line with the general improvement in toward Pacifica. As I said earlier, I'm going to ask you about what is being done about outreach. I'm particularly concerned because I see that the lab at KPFT voted not to have any diversity requirement. And that came right after, I think about 2 weeks earlier, while the board was meeting in Houston, we actually lowered the threshold for somebody for applying those diversity standards, meaning somebody to be able to bump somebody else, we lowered the requirement from one half of what that other person has, the person you would replace, to one third. And that was at the urging of members of that community that indeed, at least for the Afro-American community and maybe others, outreach had been dismal. Participation was really below what it should be. So I'm wondering what... I understand that there's no money in the budget now for KPFT now for an outreach coordinator. And so what are your plans for the near future, and particularly in view of the fact that elections are coming up soon, and in general to strengthen the outreach of the station and to the community it's reaching already and to other communities?
I think some of this is going to be addressed by Deb as the lab chair, but I know that in the budget we do have funds for an elections person that would be working with the elections committee.
Does that mean outreaching two people before the election takes place?
I don't exactly know what that means yet. We're waiting to find out.
And what is your personal view of what is your position on that?
My position is that as far as paid elections coordinator, I think it would involve necessarily not just sending out ballots and tallying results and turning those in, but actually setting up town hall meetings and setting up events out in the community and getting the word out.
No, but the question I was asking, I mean, how important do you think that this is to the process?
Well, I think it's very important.
Is it just about the finance? Is it the limitation of income? Why there's nobody whose work would be to reach out to broaden the scope?
I think that under the circumstances, it was felt that the outreach committee and a lot of this work could be done with volunteers. I know that folks are looking. Folks on the board have been looking at getting retired elections judges, for example, and other people involved in this process to help with outreach and election-related matters.
Can I answer you some about your concerns there? The lab itself voted not that it would prefer no quotas for other reasons, not because they're not concerned about diversity, but because they are concerned about it and felt that it were better ways to reach those goals. They are willing to go along with a KPFA model where there are quotas, but we put our model in there because it's possible a KPFA model may face legal hurdles when it comes down to altering votes and that sort of thing. So we wanted ours to be considered as an alternative because there is a backup plan for ensuring diversity without quotas.
The
plan is to have a committee established at the national level that will help us with a... not help us, but to ensure accuracy of a needs assessment and plans and goals for compliance and a required statement periodically. This original suggestion was every 90 days, but I think at national meetings would be sufficient to note progress on that goal and explain why goals haven't been met if they haven't been met.
If I'm permitted, this is after the fact, though, because in a way the requirement that you're trying to meet by doing diversity requirement comes after the fact, after you realize that you don't have enough people on the board. I'm talking about what are you doing in a proactive way to make sure people are present. so that we don't have hopefully to use.
Well, we have an outreach committee that I think has been just as active as any single outreach person could have been full time. The outreach committee consists of about somewhere between 5 and 10 people who are actively outreaching at all times. We have a new committee, which is very exciting, coming from Asian Pacific people who have a whole contingency. They have their whole committee all set up.
Really?
They have been doing other things, and we have invited them into Pacifica. And there is a large also black community group like that has been meeting for almost a year now. So there has been some strong outreach made, and there will be continue to be. We have added people to our staff, even though we are not as, not to our staff, to our lab, even though we are not as multicultural as I would like us to be. We've come a long way for Houston, Texas, let me tell you. When people looked at our board sitting there, they were surprised. We have black, Hispanic. We don't have an Oriental person on yet, but we expect we will. Asian, I'm sorry. I'm old. What can I tell you? I'm from the years when that was okay. We have a Native American on the diversity committee, as well as other racial mixtures. So we are moving forward, and it's a prime concern of all of ours. And we are moving on it.
Okay. Actually, okay. The Asian situation is particularly bad. I understand that there's not one person of Asian Pacific background who is sitting on any of the local advisory board. And I if we have time, I'd like to introduce a resolution.
We may be about to change that if we can get some programming.
I'm the executive director.
But right now we're on the issue of the stations. Let's come back to
do a research and tell us what's happening on that level.
Right. Can we add that at the end of the agenda or after we hear the station reports? Right now we're focusing on situation in Texas at station. Yeah.
All right. Jabari Sakia. Dwayne, when do your governor's programs that were mandated air?
Sunday evening from 7 to 9 p.m.
So you do the 2 hours in one slot?
Yeah, they do. Yeah.
We tried several variations, including modular programming of 15 to 30 minutes, rotated through different day parts. And there was some value to that, but if you're going to consistently carve out a space where people know that if they want to get involved in this process, they should be there, then you really need to be consistent. So that was what was decided.
And how long have you been doing it now?
Several months.
Okay. We talked about a program audit yesterday. When can you get one done? An audit of all your programming, like I don't know if you've seen the audit that Max Blanchet did. I mean, he did a good audit for KPFA. When can you think you can get that done or have it done?
I'm sure that I can have that to you before the next meeting, the January one.
Before the end of the year?
I could have it to you. Yeah, I mean, sure. I mean, just throw another ball up in the air. I'll grab it. But, yeah.
Yeah, I thought, and we actually discussed this yesterday, and I thought we asked for it by January 1st.
Yeah. Well, I'm just by the end of the year.
Huh?
End of the year.
Yeah, same thing. Same thing, January 1st, December 31st. And then we asked each of the stations to do that. And obviously, the National Staff Executive Director needs to check in and make sure that they're doing it.
No, I'm just asking. You know, I'm just, right. This one in mind. Also, Houston is like the fourth largest population
in the country.
In the country, right?
Mm-hmm.
What percentage of penetration does KPFT have in listenership? Because you said you're up to 9,000 paid subscribers, something like that.
9,000 plus.
You want to get up to 20. What is your projected total listener base?
Potentially 4 million.
What do you think is your existing local base? In other words, out of the people who are already listening, you say you got about 10,000 who are giving money. But you got 4 or 5 million people? in Houston?
Four million. In the greater area, sure.
And I'm just trying to figure out how we can do a better job. You know, what we would mechanically, you know, in terms of process, money, transmissions, all these kind of things, putting advertising on buses, whatever. I'm just thinking of stuff to make penetration. Oh, excuse me, that's what Houston's on him.
we're actually looking at things. In Houston, the billboard companies...
Put them on the side of horses, I guess. I don't know.
Billboard companies will sometimes let a dormant billboard be used by a nonprofit where you just pay for the production of the actual piece that goes on there and you don't pay rent. And we have some folks looking into that as one of the possibilities because Houston is a sprawling town. It's much like L.A., as far as just urban sprawl, and many people drive many, many miles to and fro every day. So if we could get a billboard down by NASA or out in Katy, for example, there'd be hundreds of thousands of people seeing that every day, and they might pop on 90.1 and check it out. So that's one of the things we're looking at.
No, I guess the
beyond
only,
the usual guerrilla
I guess
marketing
my, what I'm just trying to kind of think here is that here... We got a small amount of money and made up, 5,000 cars that Rupert made up, and as individuals go out in our daily life, we are the best advertising vehicle for anything we do because we can stick flyers here, put a card there, put something in your car window or something like that, KPFT, da da da. Because basically we got to do guerrilla advertising.
Uh-huh.
Because when we go into the community that we say we're supposed to represent, especially if we've never been there before, especially if those communities don't speak your language or you don't speak their language, is the other way of thinking about it. We need to first go there and we need to first stay there, but we need to create a presence. That's basically what I'm saying. And there's a lot of different ways that don't require a lot of money to try to create a presence if we just got people who just go there and remain there. And that's all I'm trying to... Because I'd add 4 million people, and we only got 10,000 paid subscribers. Well, you can just do the math.
This is a point throughout the system. 20,000 people in New York in a population base of 16 million. They're doing better. So this is an issue around the network. So, folks, we really need to move on. I'm nervous about people needing to leave to catch airplanes. So I don't want to cut this off, but we have to. And I want to thank Dwayne and the staff and the volunteer staff and Deb and the lab members and the committee members, for all the work you all are doing there to get that station moving in the direction it is moving in. It's great. Thank you.
It would help.
Teresa, yes.
I would like to say that Ray Hill and our prison show were featured in the last issue of Mother Jones magazine. And since we have such a large prison population, I hope some of them are listener sponsors also.
Okay, California. Let's go to Southern California, KPFK.
And just a point of information, there are KPFK. Just a few
Georgia,
board members
station
left
manager.
In the room.
No, that nothing takes sexism.
Jabari Zakia.
Lydia was on the chair of the board of the lab.
Teresa
Committee
Ellen, Carol Spooner.
So let's hear
Leslie
from
Kagan,
Eva first.
Ray LaForest,
Eva.
David Furtick,
and
Rob
again,
Robinson.
I hate to do this, but folks really need to be very concise. We're in a few minutes going to start to lose more board members. So.
Okay, Leslie, I'll make it quick.
Thank you.
Salaam alaikum to all the Muslim listeners out in KPFK Radio Land. I just want to say, even if it's late, I still want to say Eid Mubarak. I'm going to go to just a number of key issues. We've seen a lot of growth over the last 6 months in the station. The station had a very successful year of fund drives, and once again, our four fund drives totaled $820,000 in 10 days. And since the mini fund drive in September, and simultaneously doing telemarketing and direct mail campaigns, our income has totaled more than $1 million over 3 months. Just quickly, we are still, I think at the last board meeting, I think all of the board members and our listeners are aware of the problems we've been encountering with having XLNC1 from Mexico broadcast on our signal. At this point, I've been in negotiations with the GM of KUSC and XLNC. KUSC, at this point, we completed an independent study that was paid for by KUSC, and the engineer was chosen by Don Mussel and the engineer of KUSC. They just completed the study a few weeks ago, and the data showed clearly that XLNC in Mexico was broadcasting at 100% more of the power that they are legally required to do. KUC at that point then decided that they were not going to continue with their programming on XLNC because they didn't want to do anything illegal and they didn't want to create problems with KPFK. So I want to say thank you for the GM and just her incredible attitude with trying to resolve the things with us. My talks with XLNC's GM over the last couple of days has resulted in their attorneys have spoken to the authorities in Mexico, and they have another meeting in the next couple of weeks. The proposals they're making is to have is to be moved to another frequency. And XLNC also said if they can't do that, they're in dire straits. They're willing to close down the station in Mexico if it means going off and giving our signal back to us. So that's the latest from the negotiations. We hope that it could be resolved through the FCC and Mexican authorities so that another radio station doesn't have to go off the air. Quickly on outreach, we have, during the fund drive, we sold, like, what was the hottest premium, I think, at most of our stations, the Hidden Wars of There's a Storm video. We sold 700 of those, and at the time felt, you know, there's so much that the listeners does for us, and the support is incredible. Let's do something. So we did this outreach campaign, and we did 10 events in a week, which was last week, where we went around Los Angeles and screened the Hidden Wars of Desert Storm video as a thank you gift, but also using it as an outreach tool. In that week, we reached more than 2,000 of our listeners that came out to bookstores and different venues where we showed it. Talking to students at colleges and universities, we are now going to show this video throughout January and February throughout Southern California to the students. And through this outreach campaign, we found that a lot of young people are being drawn to KPFK and Pacifica because of the peace message, because of our stand against the war. So that's really encouraging. We also had last week a very successful poetry event with the Underground Poets Railroad that just came back from their national tour, and their work is about social and political consciousness that they do through poetry and hip-hop. That was very successful. We were completely sold out. So once again, I want to say thank you to Jerry Quigley, our producer, that coordinated and put that together. On programming, very quickly, Thanksgiving, incredible programming. I want to say thank you to the Native Indian Airwaves program. It was brought back to the airwaves, and I think we brought them back in August or September. They did incredible programming throughout the day. I want to say thank you to our listeners. And we also did gratitude programs. We have people on the air right now like Wayne Dyer and Neil Donald Wells hosting shows on KPFK in the absence of Lisa Gar, our very pregnant programmer that I hope has a baby by now, because she was due on the 20th of November. But I want to say thank you for you know, this. We have incredible people that's coming forward to just host and be part of KPFK's programming. On Peace Watch, we have aired Peace Watch, which created a lot of conflict within the station amongst producers and afternoon dive programmers, but we have peace was during our drive time, and that's where it will stay. I think it's important during this time of war that we don't even question why something like Peace Watch should be at the highest level of visibility for our audience. On December 18, we will be doing a radiothon of 18 hours with an organization called Share LA. It was a proposal brought forward by... I can't remember his name right now, but he was the founder of the LA Weekly. Oh, Jay Levin. Jay Levin, thanks for bringing this proposal to us. And we'll talk about, it's called Poverty in Los Angeles, and it will deal with all of the issues of poverty relating to policy, anything from being homeless and veterans, to look at the status of poverty in Los Angeles versus the war, the cost of the war, the impact of the war, etc. So to play those two things off against each other. And to our listeners, our regular programmers will be hosting throughout this day, so they won't hear other hosts. Also, we've had conflict, a lot of you I'm sure I'm aware, between at the station management and staff. We have come from a retreat and several workshops where we've used the Arnold Mandel nonviolent resolution, training resolution workshops. It's been very successful. The facilitator sent me a report last night, and I think at the bottom of the report, it said that they were in the staff meeting on Wednesday. Said it was amazing, the turnover and the change in staff. He said into our staff meeting on Wednesday and said it couldn't believe it was the same staff and management team where people were just sitting laughing with each other and teasing and having a sense of ease amongst each other. So I'm very grateful that through that process of these workshops and the retreat that there was a lot of healing that took place, and we hope to continue to build on that.
You said turnaround.
My apologies for that. You know, there's a bunch of stuff, but I'm not going to go into it. I want to say that we have a new development director. And, in fact, some of the listeners in Los Angeles would probably still be familiar with the name. It's Sharon Jennings. She was the candidate that ran against me for the GM position. I'm very excited to have her on board. She's coming on Monday. So I'm very excited about that. I think that's going to be very good for the station. Our PD position is open still with the search committee, and they have a deadline of the 15th to come up with final candidates. I certainly trust and hope that that will happen because it leaves a lot of pressure on the station. The producers, I want to say thank you to them. They've been incredible. They've taken on a lot of projects in the absence of a PD. And they've just been really successful about taking leadership and initiative. So I just wanted to say thank you to the staff, the volunteers, the programmers, and our listeners. And I think that's it from me for now. Thank you so much.
Hey, thank you. Thank you very much. And the lab vice chair, is that your title?
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, one more thing, Kwazi. I'm sorry. 1 minute. Can I take it? I'm sorry. I forgot about this. I have just secured a major donor for KPFK. What we're looking at is to move away from the large expenditure on premiums. And so I wrote a proposal with the assistance of the producers and actually pitched to this millionaire in L.A. during our fund drive because he had until the end of November to pay out the money. We wrote the proposal for a couple of $100,000 for a team of producers to go to Iraq and produce a video documentary, an audio documentary, a book, a CD, and peace posters. We have just received approval 2 days ago on this proposal.
Okay, quasi.
Well, thank you. I'm feeling kind of challenged in making this report today to do it in a way that I hope will be constructive and that will be helpful to all of us. Eva has talked to you about really some fantastic things. I mean, just I could go on and on and on about the things that have been accomplished at our station within the past 6 months, particularly since Eva has come on as our general manager. One of the things that I think is most significant is, as Damu Smith was mentioning earlier, that many of the activists, the real hardcore social and political activists in our community, who had stopped listening to KPFK, who had stopped listening to Pacifica, because they weren't getting the kind of programming, the kind of news analysis, the kind of dialogue on our station that was useful to them, and they have historically kind of demarcated. Our station is being restored, and part of what I'm hearing from more and more activists in our area, I'm listening to the station again. I'm going to give a contribution to keep the station alive again. People who had stopped contributing, a lot of that was alienation with the old administration, but also a lot of it, frankly, was alienation with a certain kind of stagnation in our program, inattentiveness to the quality of what we put out on the air, how we utilize our airtime, and the level of respect that we showed for the importance of for lack of a better term, the aesthetics of our broadcast quality. And that is beginning to change at our station, and that's very important. One of the things that I think that the past year, the past 6 months, has really posed for us in some very dramatic ways in our location, and I don't think that we're unique, is that most of these changes have taken place against the background of, frankly, a lot of internal dynamics in our own midst that don't always reflect the best of who we are as progressive people and as the Pacifica community. We have had very severe struggles going on for some time, and I'd say particularly since Eva came into office as our GM, around the question of racial dynamics in our local station. And this is nothing new. It's been going on for a long time. It is extremely, at times, disheartening to the extent that we recognize and see the level at which these struggles unfold in progressive circles. Not in our battles with the reactionaries, not with the George Bush and the corporate struggle, but our struggles with each other as progressive people. And I think that one of the things to me that stands out is that one of the lessons that I found from the experience of the past 6 months in particular in our locality is that I think that once we move beyond the stage of being social protesters, people who have a grievance and a gripe with society, the question of what our positive commitments are about, the true values that we operate and function from on a day-to-day basis in our actual relationships with each other and with diverse communities and people from those communities is really the litmus test of who and what we are and the reality of the rhetoric which we are often broadcasting on the air and carrying in communities. And believe me, like anyone else and anything else, the people out there, the people who we hope to reach with positive messages directed towards social change are examining all of us very, very critically each and every day, just as much as they do the powers that be that hold the levers of power on economics and politics and all the other problematic processes and institutions of the society. And in fact, they may be looking at us more critically. And we need to really be aware of that. I think that in many cases, we're not aware of that. We're also generally, you know, in the 60s, there was an old saying that you're either part of the solution or you're part of the problem. Well, you know, experience over the years has proven that even if you're part of the solution, you're also part of the problem, and it doesn't matter who you are. You know, and this is because we're simply products of the society that we're trying to change. Recently, Frankly, I found myself in several situations where I was actually reaching the point of feeling compelled to break my connection with our station, our lab, the network, and many progressive people from L.A. who I've had good and respectful working relationship with for a number of years over some of these issues. I mean, that's how deep this runs. And that what this points to me, is part of the seriousness of what our national board did at its meeting in July in adopting the resolution on race and nationality and diversity, and the importance for us to really internalize that. We cannot always